This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT in Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender identity. This is Queer Voices.
And as we start out for year 2006, tonight we'll have David Elliott calling in from Washington to give us a perspective of what's going on up there with the hearing starting tomorrow. Lily Roddy is going to talk about a 2006 astrological forecast. Carol White is going to talk about some political stuff that's going on in the community. And we're going to be doing a year review from this way out on movies and then, of course, audiophile. All that's coming up on Queer Voices. But first, we go to London and the BBC World News.
BBC News with Julie Candler. The Palestinian leader Mahmoud Abbas has said that he's in favor of postponing this month's general elections if Israel carries out its threat to prevent Palestinians from voting in East Jerusalem. Mr. Abbas, who had so far been resisting calls from the other leaders of his Fatah party to delay the polls, said that there was a consensus that voting should not take place if Palestinians in East Jerusalem were not allowed to vote. The Palestinian deputy prime minister and head of Fatah's election campaign, Nabil Sharp, says it all depends on Israel.
There will be no elections without Jerusalem. Israel would have made a major departure from the requirements of the peace process, the assurances of the quartet, and its own assurances. And no Palestinian will accept such precedent about Jerusalem at such a crucial and critical time.
Two Palestinian militants have been killed by an Israeli air attack in the northern Gaza Strip. They were traveling in a car when it was struck by a missile. A third man with them was severely wounded. Alan Johnston reports from Gaza.
The car was traveling down a street on the edge of the town of Jubalia when it was hit by the Israeli missile. The dead men have been identified as members of the Islamic Jihad organization, a local commander and his lieutenant. The Israelis have targeted militants in Gaza in this way numerous times. They say that one of the pair killed in this latest airstrike was a senior figure responsible for attacks on Israeli targets.
Officials in southern Germany say the operation to rescue people trapped in an ice rink after the roof collapsed is being hampered by bad weather and fears about the instability of the remaining roof structure. Rescue workers in Bad Reichenhall in Bavaria are using cranes to try to reach those still trapped under the wreckage. Officials say at least 5 people have been killed and 26 are being treated in local hospitals. Up to another 20 adults and children are feared trapped. The fire service said the roof appeared to have given way under the weight of snow. The head of the district authority, George Grabner, said rescuers were doing everything possible.
First of all, we have to make the roof secure so we can search for the rest of the people. We've got nearly 700 helpers here, from the police, the Bavarian and Austrian Red Cross. There are rescue dogs here, the army is here. We're doing everything humanly possible to rescue the people still lying under the roof.
It's emerged that the town authorities cancelled a training session for the local youth ice hockey team, and local people said the ice rink should have been closed to the public at that point. You're listening to the news from the BBC. Emergency officials in the American state of West Virginia say 13 miners have been trapped underground by an explosion at a coal mine. Officials say 6 people managed to escape following the explosion at the Sago mine in Upshur County. Attempts to contact the other 13 have so far failed. High-level diplomatic contacts are taking place to resolve the dispute between Russia and Ukraine over energy prices, a row that's affected gas supplies to large parts of Europe. The European Union's foreign policy chief, Javier Solana, said a negotiated solution was the only option. He said the EU was trying to persuade Russia and Ukraine to resume talks. Damian Grammaticus reports from Moscow.
The fear that this gas crisis is starting to impact on Europe appears to be a real worry for Moscow. Russia insists it is pumping enough gas for its European customers. Today, the state gas firm Gazprom accused Ukraine of theft, saying shortfalls in Europe have arisen because Ukraine has diverted almost 100 million cubic meters of gas worth around $25 million. Ukraine, though, has angrily denied the claims it is illegally siphoning off any gas. It's accused Russia of blackmail and says it wants international arbitration to set a fair price for its gas supplies.
There's been a major earthquake under the South Pacific Ocean near Fiji. The U.S. Geological Survey said the earthquake, which measured 7 on the Richter scale, struck deep under the sea about 100 kilometers northeast of the remote Fijian island of Ndoi. There's been no immediate word on damage or casualties, and the Hawaii-based Pacific Tsunami Warning Center said it did not expect the quake to trigger a tsunami. The main Colombian guerrilla group, the FARC, has ruled out an exchange of about 60 of its hostages for jailed rebel fighters. In a statement on the internet, the FARC said there would be no negotiations as long as Colombia's president, Alvaro Uribe, remained in office. The FARC accused Mr. Uribe, who's seeking re-election, of trying to exploit efforts by a group of three European countries to facilitate an exchange. BBC News.
This is Queer Voices.
Good evening. This is Jack Walensky.
And J.D. Doyle.
Jennifer Renee.
Greg Chapman.
Deborah Bell.
And Glenn Holt.
And we're back this week. We weren't on last week. We didn't find out about it until the previous Thursday, so we're sorry we couldn't give you any warning. And the unfortunate thing is we missed a...
The second half of the Queer Music Heritage very queer Christmas show, we missed airing that, but those of you who care enough can go to my website, queermusicheritage.com, where it's archived along with every other show from the last 6 years.
And we also had an interview set up, which in this case actually sort of worked out, Jennifer, didn't it?
Yeah, we had it with Tucker Duncan, who's the writer-director of Transamerica. At that time, it looked like it was going to open just after the show. As it turns out, we've got him scheduled for next Monday, the 9th, and it's going to be opening on the 13th.
So that worked out in that case.
Sure did.
And tonight, we have a number of things. We're going to be talking to David Elliott shortly. Then we have
Lily Roddy with the astrological forecast for 2006, as well as Carol Wyatt doing a political rant.
And we have two long segments of This Way Out. One is perspective of the movies of last year.
And that should be very good. Steve Pride does great work for,
yes,
This Way Out. The other is the year-end audiophile edition of This Way Out, which is a kind of the best of the year, in our opinions, of the features we did all year on This Way Out on audiophile.
But first we go to Washington, and we have David Elliott on the line. David, how are you doing?
Well, good evening, Jack, and Happy New Year to you, and Happy New Year to Queer Voices.
Well, thank you.
You know, Jack, I had planned on coming on the air tonight and talking about a very interesting and compelling story, kind of a bombshell of a story that ran in Saturday's Washington Post about Congressman Tom DeLay, some new information that has just come out about him. But tonight we have another bombshell breaking. We have breaking news out of the state capitol complex in Austin. We have news that state comptroller Carol Keaton Strayhorn, who describes herself as, quote, one tough grandma, unquote, will indeed be running for governor, but not as a Republican. She has announced today that she will be running as an independent candidate for governor of Texas.
This is really interesting, and I'm not sure which way to take it.
Well, the ramifications of this potentially are profound. There is a strong independence movement building out there, a nonpartisan movement.
Good.
I think that this does two things. First, perhaps unfortunately, I don't know, it probably kills the candidacy of independent candidate Kinky Friedman, the author and musician. Second, if Carol Keaton Strayhorn's candidacy catches fire at all, she's going to be taking away a lot more Republican votes than Democratic votes. So it opens the door for a Democrat such as former Congressman Chris Bell to capture the governor's mansion in November.
Well, and what's going to happen is that we will probably end up with a runoff. Is that not correct?
No, that keep in mind, Jack, that when we have those November elections, you win with the plurality of the vote.
Oh.
You win with the plurality. So if the Democrats wage a competitive campaign and Carol Keaton Strayhorn is polling 10%, and 80% of those votes that she's polling are moderate Republicans, then you see where the math takes us. I am shocked. I am utterly beside myself at this development. This could turn out to be the... Well, now I want to talk about Tom DeLay in a minute, but this could turn out to be one of the key dramatic political developments of 2006. And look at us. We're only in the second day of the year. It's going to be one heck of a year.
Yeah, and we should remember, too, David, that when Carol Keaton, Rylander, Strayhorn, etc., was the mayor of Austin, she was a Democrat.
Well, that's true, and I lived there then. In fact, she played on her high school tennis team with my mother, and I went to school with her children, one of whom is now White House Press Secretary Scott McClellan.
Yes.
I can't wait to see what he says about this when he's asked about it in the daily briefing tomorrow, because you know he will be.
Yes.
So it's going to be very, very interesting. But meanwhile, my friends, we also have the continuing and dramatically unfolding saga of Tom DeLay. And I really can't believe that we're sitting here on January 2nd, 2006, with so much political news. But consider this. The Washington Post, this past Saturday, published a lead story on their front page talking about Tom DeLay's financial connections with lobbyist Jack Abramoff, and also with a nonprofit organization he has run for some years now. It's now defunct. It's gone out of business. It's called the U.S. Family Network. Now, we've known of this nonprofit's existence for many years, but we didn't know exactly how it was funded or what it did. We now know. It was principally funded with a $1 million cash donation from oil and gas interests in Russia, plus $500,000 donated in 1998 and 1999 from textile companies in the Mariana Islands. These textile companies pay slave wages
yes.
to their employees.
Yes.
And Tom DeLay committed to blocking legislation that would have increased those companies' labor costs. In other words, this legislation would have raised the minimum wage on the Mariana Islands. This nonprofit also collected $250,000 from the Mississippi Choctaw Band of American Indians. The U.S. Family Network, after receiving this contribution, issued a letter opposing another tribe opening a casino in neighboring Alabama that would have competed with the Choctaw Indians casino in Mississippi. So the financial web just keeps going deeper and deeper and deeper. And this story is significant for a couple of reasons. Three reasons. First, heretofore, we have not known how the U.S. Family Network was funded. Second, we have not known before this of the deep financial connections between Tom DeLay and lobbyist, now indicted lobbyist, Jack Abramoff. Third, this whole Jack Abramoff scandal that's unfolding in Congress is starting to look like the biggest scandal to engulf Congress since the Abscam scandal of the late 1970s and early 1980s. It now looks like as many as 4 to 6 Republican members of Congress will be indicted because of this scandal this year, as well as possibly 1 or 2 members of the U.S. Senate, as well as a number of high-ranking congressional aides, as well as a number of employees of the executive branch of the U.S. government.
Well, this is almost incredible Christmas, you know, it's a holiday type of news. Now, this is going to happen in the courts, right? This is not going to be a congressional investigation.
No, you know, Congress probably will start their hearings on this. I think the House Ethics Committee is going to be obligated to start doing something, and already people are starting to talk about sponsoring legislation to rein in the influence of lobbyists on K Street, which interestingly is where I work, although I'm not a lobbyist. I want to hasten to add that. But we will see a Department of Justice investigation, in fact, multiple investigations, one's going on right now, into all of this before it all shakes loose. It's going to be a fascinating year, and I'm going to go ahead and go, you know, get right out front and make a prediction that this will cause a change in political leadership, a change in party leadership in both the U.S. House and U.S. Senate this November.
Well, that sounds great. The only thing is that this administration is so good at painting things over and sort of changing the subject, just like with the New York Times disclosing about them secretly investigating U.S. citizens, and they're going after, not after the fact that they were breaking the law, but that they needed to do this because of national security. They've been able to hide so much behind national security.
You know, at some point, I think we have to have faith in the process.
Yes.
I know that, you know, one might say, you know, fool me once, shame on me, fool me twice. No.
Now you're doing what George Bush did.
I've got his little speaking disorder. I don't know what it is.
Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me.
Deb, thanks for bailing me out here.
Well, this is absolutely incredible news, and we, you know, we hope it, you know, that justice does win over in this case. And it's going to be interesting as this unfolds to see what Fox News, how they're going to be able to, you know, try to keep that picture painted in their
fair and balanced way that they always do.
Yes.
Fox guarding the hen house.
And David, what about the Alito hearings?
Well, you know, I'm afraid I don't have much good news to pass on that front. There is really no reason to suggest at this point that he is not going to be confirmed, and I think that that's going to be bad news for our community.
Hmm. Well, finally, David, you in a previous life worked for the Texas Triangle.
That is correct.
And Texas Triangle last year was sold out to the Dallas Voice, and it became TXT Magazine for the state of Texas. Well, this past Friday was its last issue.
I'm very saddened to hear that. You know, we did a lot of unique things at the Texas Triangle. For one thing, more so than any other paper in the state, it was a newspaper that covered the lesbian, gay,
yes,
bisexual, and transgender community. You know, we never forgot about the LGBT and what all four of those letters stand for. And, you know, Kay Longcope was the founder of the Texas Triangle, the owner and the publisher, and she indeed brought me on to be its managing editor, and it's really sad, really. I don't know what else to say.
It is sad. Of course, you know, in Houston having three competing GLBT publications, I'm sure it was tough to keep them going, and I'm not exactly sure what the whole story is behind it, but it is a sad day that our friend Nancy Ford worked there for many years.
A hilarious, hilarious columnist.
Yes, yes. And we're going to have her on soon to talk about, you know, what she can tell us.
Yeah, and also what she plans to do for the future. But I think probably a lot of it just had to do with economics.
Yes.
The competitive advertising dollars. It just wasn't enough to sustain more than one weekly.
Well, and Austin is a little bit different from Dallas and Houston.
A little bit?
In Austin, you don't really have lesbian and gay neighborhoods, per se. And, you know, things, you know, one could argue that things are a little bit more integrated between the communities.
Yes.
And that always made it a difficult proposition to maintain a financially viable publication for the LGBT community.
Well, and also in Dallas and in Houston, those neighborhoods are not quite as defined as they used to be.
And I think that's happening in all the ghettos across the country, GLBT ghettos, that people don't come in with the computer. They don't come into the community like they used to. But anyway, David, why don't you tell us where you work for during your 9-to-5 type of job?
Well, during my 9-to-5 job, Jack, I work for the National Coalition to Abolish the Death Penalty. You can check out our website at www.ncadp.org. Again, that's ncadp.org. And you can also look at my blog at www.deathpenaltyusa.blogspot.com.
Thank you, David, for joining us, and you're listening to Queer Voices.
You're the only gay private eye in the Capital District, maybe in all of New York State.
Love is harder than crime.
Gay sex in the 70s.
Tell her I'm a friend, a nice Chinese girl.
Our mayor, this mayor of this city, has defied God's law.
Most Americans hate gay people.
Two worlds exist in this country. Be quiet, conservative life, and the life of those two men.
You gonna do this again next summer?
Well, maybe not.
Happy New Year and welcome to This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. In this week's second of our two traditional holiday season specials, award-winning entertainment reporter Steve Pride recalls some of the most memorable queer moments on big and small screens during the past 12 months, and they were plentiful. Our news wrap crew returns next week to bring us up to date on some of the news in or affecting the gay and lesbian community. But now it's time to dim the house lights for Pride on Screen 2005.
Hello, I'm Steve Pride, and welcome to a very special Pride on Screen. Sit back, relax, and butter your popcorn while we look at the best of gay and lesbian images on screens, both big and small, and pick the 10 best LGBT films of the year.
After my operation, I will be a woman.
Summer, I was 8 years old. 5 hours disappeared from my life.
The bottom line is, we're around each other, and this thing grabs hold of us again.
On the night of November 14th, two men broke into a quiet farmhouse in Kansas and murdered an entire family.
Before we get to my list of the top 10 films, let's start small. Besides inroads at the multiplex, this year, gay images and storylines on the small screen were almost too numerous to count, especially on over-the-air broadcast television.
Dude, what if your mom walks in?
She won't.
You don't know that. Just wait till everybody's asleep. Seriously, I'll make it worth your while.
You better.
That was Desperate Housewives, if you're keeping score. This year on cable, the gay-adjacent programming of Bravo and Lifetime was trumped by three gay-specific networks competing for the gay viewer's attention. Here, television expanded from satellite to cable pay-per-view and added original made-for-television fare that retooled well-worn genres. Dante's Cove had hunks in a haunted house, and Chad Allen was a gay detective in Third Man Out.
Look, Strachey, I need your help. You're the only gay private eye in the Capital District, maybe in all of New York State.
I see. You figured that would make me sympathetic to your case. Is that it? Well, you figured wrong.
Cute Television moved into a state-of-the-art production facility in Burbank and started popping up on cable systems around the U.S. with a mix of talk shows, queer classic films, and news.
Welcome to the QT and World News on Planet Out. I'm Christopher Jones.
This summer, MTV Networks, the force behind channels like VH1, MTV, TV Land, and Spike TV, gave birth to the biggest cable channel ever for lesbians and gays, Logo.
This is CBS News on Logo. I'm Jason Bellini. All this week, we'll be looking back at the year 2005, from the battle over same-sex marriage to the growing trend of gay themes showing up on the silver screen.
I'm not sure they're silver anymore, but the big story on the big screen is similar to what we saw on television. While themes dealing with coming of age or coming out of the closet popped up in gems like My Summer of Love and Dorian Blues, they were largely supplanted by gay and lesbian projects working within familiar, well-worn mainstream genres. Val Kilmer's gay detective in Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, or the lesbian spies of Debs. The latter propelled writer-director Angela Robinson from obscurity to a deal with Disney.
My name's Angela Robinson. The premise of Debs is that there's a secret test hidden in the SAT, and if you score particularly well on this test, then you're recruited by the government into a top-secret agency for girls.
Why is it I can hold the whole world hostage instead of going on one stupid blind date?
Because love is harder than crime.
There were a number of great comedies in 2005. Despite its name, Slutty Summer was low on budget but high on the benefits of commitment and love. Garçon Stupide, a coming-of-age story about a young gay man in Switzerland, was amusing, poignant, and boasted the hottest poster of the year. Red Doors from filmmaker Georgia Lee revolved around an Asian-American family that included a lesbian daughter. It's now being developed by CBS for a possible series. And in a similar vein, there was Saving Face, written and directed by Alice Wu.
I'd like to see your place. I have a pregnant mother at home.
I'd like to meet her.
Yeah, she's not ready.
It's been weeks. Tell her I'm a friend, a nice Chinese girl.
You're not just a nice Chinese girl.
I'll fake it.
You don't know my mom.
Exactly.
But I did promise you a list. So what are my picks for the 10 best gay films of 2005? It's a tough year to pick only 10, but for me, I think number 10 would be Coup de Gilles.
Olivier Ducastel and I'm Jacques Martineau. We are the directors, writers, but not the producers of Côte d'Azur
or Crustacea et Coquillage in French.
It's Crustacean and Shellfish
or Cockles and Mussels.
Well, it's a family movie.
The thing we can tell is that it's what we call a summer vacation movie, because we have very long summer vacation in France. People take between 3 weeks and 5 weeks in summer. And it's parents in their 40s and teenagers, and it's the way that they imagine the lives of each other. The parents guessing that maybe their son is gay, and the teenager looking to their parents like they think maybe their life is a little bit boring, and in fact the parents' life is quite exciting.
So it's a holiday movie, and it's all about sexuality and sexual identity.
نگران نباشید اگه یک مدتی از من خبر نداشته باشید. میبوسمتون. قربان شما. سیامک.
My pick for number 9 is a film released by Wolf Video that few people saw during its theatrical run. Luckily, they'll soon be releasing it on DVD. It's called Unveiled and is a stunningly beautiful portrait of a woman who is an illegal Iranian refugee, cross-dressing as a man to hide in a small German town. Her situation becomes complicated and frightening when she falls in love with a local woman. Another film that crossed the politics of the Middle East with a German storyline came from the award-winning filmmaker behind Yossi and Jagger, Etienne Fox, who returned to the American multiplex with an Israeli drama about a hitman tracking down an ex-Nazi officer. Going undercover, he finds his prejudices challenged when he meets the man's openly gay grandson. At number 8, Walk on Water.
So they didn't circumcise you? I think I never saw one. You know, we used to talk about it in the army. If it looks bigger and if it's better in bed.
I don't know. It's the only one I ever had.
Israel is perceived as one of the world's more macho societies, so the rules of queer theory dictate that homophobia ought to be the norm. But it's a young country and one of many contradictions.
Israel is an amazing place because it's, on the one hand, it's very tough and closed and oppressed in many ways.
Director Eitan Fox.
But on the other hand, you have this amazing gay scene or gay life in Tel Aviv, and you have nightclubs and bars and my movies and other movies and television series that have gay characters in them. And we were first to have these characters before Americans had them even, you know. It's like, and so you say, how could this happen? It's full of contradictions and full of these dichotomies. On the one hand, you're these tough machos, and on the other hand, you're so open-minded and accepting towards gays. It's a crazy place, Israel.
There were great LGBT documentaries in 2005. I found Unexpected Suspense in Nicole Kahn's Little Man, which recounted the heart-wrenching story of her tiny son Nicholas, born an amazing 100 days premature. Pursuit of Equality, focused on the gay marriage flap in San Francisco, and Maverick Mayor Gavin Newsom.
Here today is because our mayor, this mayor of this city, has defy God's law and the law of the
This is Gavin Newsom, mayor of the city and county of San Francisco. In his State of the Union address, President Bush said, "We must defend the sanctity of marriage." 23 days later, Mayor Gavin Newsom authorized San Francisco city officials to issue marriage licenses to same-sex couples.
I guess I realized when I got into office that guys like me come and go, and sooner than we think. We're just pictures on a wall and a proclamation as we hand off the baton to someone else. And you got a moment in time, and you got an opportunity to advance something you believe in. Otherwise, you play in the margins, and you look back, and you start regretting. I'm not interested in dreaming of regretting. I want to try to do what I can to say what I'm saying privately in a public way.
But hands down, the best documentary of 2005 was my pick for number 7, Gay Sex in the 70s. In this long overdue film, Joseph Lovett looked behind every bush, literally, in his fascinating memoir of the sexual explosive 12-year period between Stonewall and the onset of AIDS. It's hard now to imagine a world where casual sex was casual, when fear of a lethal sexually transmitted disease was unknown, and when being homosexual was more about endless sex than the right to marry.
I'm Joe Lovett. My film is Gay Sex in the 70s. I did the film for a number of reasons. I thought it was really important to really look at that time because it was really the forming of a gay community. And I'd spent so much time in AIDS work, putting sex and AIDS together. I wanted to look at sex before AIDS and the development of sexual attitudes and sexual behavior and look at where it came from. Before 1969, gay people were separated not only from their own feelings, they were separated from one another and separated from the culture in which they lived. And after Stonewall, people came together. And it was a revolutionary period anyway, with all the anti-war movement and the civil rights movement and the women's movement. Life was changing fast. And individuals were getting together and changing the rules. And gay men and women started to do that as well.
My pick for number 6 is Loggerheads.
Do you know what the most amazing thing is? A female loggerhead who's born on this beach will return to this exact spot to lay her eggs.
How does she know?
It's a mystery. But something pulls her back.
When birth mothers like yourself try to find relinquished children, it can be very disruptive to the adoptive family. A closed adoption protects them.
Protects them from what?
From you.
The moving, lyrical film Loggerheads from writer-director Tim Kirkman tells the story of an adoption triad: birth mother, child, and adoptive parents. The three interwoven stories take place in the days leading up to a Mother's Day weekend, but in three distinct geographical regions of North Carolina, and possibly in three different years. In Asheville, Grace, an airport car rental agent, quits her job and embarks on a quest to find the son she gave up for adoption when she was just a teenager. Across the state in Cure Beach, a young man named Mark, obsessed with saving loggerhead sea turtles, meets George, a lonely motel owner, who offers him love and a place to stay as he battles AIDS. In the heart of the state, in the small town of Eden, a minister's wife struggles to confront her conservative husband over their estrangement from their adoptive son. According to writer-director Tim Kirkman, the film was inspired by true events.
Patsy and Eloise, the magic ladies from Dear Jesse, magic is mothers against Jesse in Congress. They were a political action group that was set up to try to help defeat Jesse Helms during the 1996 election. They called me and said, "We've just met someone that you need to meet. And it's this woman who had this great story about having given up a child for adoption and then her search for him through the North Carolina adoption system and the barriers that she faced in trying to do that." So as I got to know her, she shared with me not only her life, but his life. She shared with me his diaries, his writing, his photographs. His life was sort of open to me on the page. And I thought, this is a fantastic story. It needs to be told. I mean, this is a story of two people, two adults, who really wanted to meet and weren't allowed to meet.
At number 5, another film set in the pre-cocktail era of AIDS. The Dying Gull is a psychological thriller based on the Craig Lucas play of the same name. Part Sunset Boulevard, part Greek tragedy, it's a tale of lust, power, corruption, betrayal, and revenge. Robert, played by Peter Sarsgaard, is a screenwriter who's written a film based on his lover's death from AIDS. Studio executive Jeffrey, played by Campbell Scott, loves the script but has a theory.
Most Americans hate gay people. If they hear it's about gay people, they won't go.
What about Philadelphia?
Philadelphia is a movie about a man who hates gay people.
While this is the directorial debut for out gay playwright and screenwriter Craig Lucas, he's not new to Hollywood, having written Longtime Companion, Prelude to a Kiss, and The Secret Lives of Dentist. But in all his dealings with the movie biz, Lucas never had to make the Faustian bargain he presents in The Dying Gaul.
I have to say that most of the movie is invented. I know the world a little bit. I worked out here a little bit. Not very much. Nobody ever asked me to de-gay a script, and certainly no ostensibly straight producer ever came on to me. Most of the producers that approached me about projects out here were already gay, and they were out. So, you know, you make up a story, but for a story to work, there have to be problems.
This is Gavin Newsom, mayor of San Francisco, the most diverse and welcoming city in the world. And you're listening to Pride on Screen on This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine.
My pick for film number 4 comes from the director that, some say, invented the queer cinema new wave of the early 90s. Mysterious Skin is about pedophilia, hustlers, aliens, sadists, and the dark side of childhood. It's based on the Scott Hine novel of the same name.
Summer, I was 8 years old. 5 hours disappeared from my life. 5 hours. Lost. Gone without a trace.
Hello, this is Greg Araki, director of the film Mysterious Skin. I read the book in 1995 when it was first published, and it just had such a huge impact on me. I just loved it. It was such an important story, but such a heartfelt story and so sincere and just so emotional. It really just kind of devastated me when I read it, and it stayed with me for years afterwards. And so I knew that if I ever did make a film out of a book, this would be the book that I would want to do.
There were several movies this year that touched on perceptions of gender. Besides The Sublime Unveiled, Neil Jordan's uneven adaptation of novelist Pat McCabe's Breakfast on Pluto featured Cillian Murphy as a flamboyant crossdresser. And the best part of the disappointing movie version of Rent was Wilson Germain Herrera's performance as the drag queen Angel. That brings me to the number 3 film on my list, Transamerica.
Medical procedures to date.
The usual electrolysis, 3 years of hormone therapy, and a facial feminization surgery. After my operation, I will be a woman.
In Transamerica, a preoperative male-to-female transsexual takes an unexpected journey when she learns that she fathered a son, now a teenage runaway hustling on the streets of New York. Prior to her pending surgery, Bree travels to New York City to bail out the teenage Toby.
Me, Toby Wilkins.
Jesus the Reformer.
That's one of these churches that sends missionaries out.
No, I'm from the Church of the Potential Father.
Felicity Huffman is amazing as Bree. There are not a lot of positive portrayals of transsexuals on film, so Huffman was determined to get it right.
I worked with a woman who coaches men who are becoming women. I watched her coaching a transgendered woman, first of all, and then she coached me. So she did her regular style of teaching, and how I learned was as if I didn't know anything. So when she said, look, when women speak, they use their hands a lot. Men don't. When women speak, they give long and verbose answers, which I am an example of right now. And men usually, you know, go, yes, no. Well, it was hard. Women nod. Women go along in the conversation. They bring you along. Men don't. So I learned it as if I didn't know anything.
Although my number 2 pick takes place during a single period in Truman Capote's biography, the 5.5 years during which he researched and wrote his 1966 classic, In Cold Blood, the film Capote delivers the sum of the man.
On the night of November 14th, 2 men broke into a quiet farmhouse in Kansas and murdered an entire family. And why did they do that? 2 worlds exist in this country. The quiet, conservative life and the life of those 2 men with the underbelly, the criminally violent. And those worlds converged that bloody night.
In this dazzling film, Philip Seymour Hoffman is amazing in the title role. But the prolific character actor does not immediately spring to mind when you think of Truman Capote. And he agrees.
They came to my house with the script. Danny and Bennett, who I've known since I was in high school. I didn't go to high school with them, but I met them in the summer program then. And before that time, I'd never thought about it at all. I mean, literally, I probably was thinking about napping or something. And they came to my house and said, "Hey, we have a script. Do you want to play Truman Capote?" And I was like, I thought, first of all, that's absurd. And it really was. It was kind of like, well, that doesn't really. I mean, that was my reaction. It wasn't like, oh, yay, I get to, you know. It was like, what do you mean? You know, because of my image of Truman Capote in my head didn't really fit me.
A Google search of the phrase Brokeback Mountain returns over 10 million hits. It's the whispered favorite of a truckload of movie awards. It's a cowboy movie. It's not a cowboy movie. But no matter what your opinion of this wrenching love story, there's no denying its importance. Based on a short story by Pulitzer Prize-winning author Annie Proulx, the film version of Brokeback Mountain was directed by Academy Award-winning filmmaker Ang Lee from a screenplay by Pulitzer Prize-winning author Larry McMultrie and his longtime writing partner Diana Asana. It's not just a landmark gay film. It's one of the most heart-wrenching love stories that I've ever seen. Set against the sweeping vistas of Wyoming and Texas, the film tells the story of two young men, a ranch hand and a rodeo cowboy, who meet in the summer of 1963 when they work as sheep herders up on Brokeback Mountain. Ennis Del Mar, played by Heath Ledger, and Jack Twist, played by Jake Gyllenhaal, become friends and then unexpectedly lovers. But at summer's end, the two must come down from Brokeback and part ways.
You gonna do this again next summer?
Well, maybe not. Like I said, me and Al was getting married in November. So, I'm trying to get something on the ranch, I guess. You?
Might go up to my daddy's place and give him a hand through the winter. I might be back. The army don't get me.
Well, I guess I'll see you around, huh?
Right.
Filmmaker Ang Lee is heterosexual, grew up in Taiwan, and was only 9 years old in 1963. So what drew him to this particular story?
Gay ranch hands in Wyoming, they're very far from me. But I think it touched that enigmatic subject of love, I think. And because the strange combination of West, macho Western and the gay love story, somehow, I think the infamiliarity for me reach out very far in that mystery, and the emotion lands very hard, but the emotion is about missing, about something you don't get. I think that's very poignant, very profound. It's kind of existential to think that two characters spent 20 years trying to go back to where they started in the mountain, in a place that they hardly understand themselves. So that's a calling for me.
Remaining in Wyoming, Ennis does wed his sweetheart Alma, has two daughters, and struggles to eke out a living. Jack, in Texas, catches the eye of a wealthy rodeo queen, gets a job working for her father, they have a son. 4 years pass. One day, Ennis gets a postcard from Jack, who's en route to visit from Wyoming. When Jack arrives, it's clear that the passage of time has only strengthened their feelings. In the years that follow, Ennis and Jack meet up several times annually. They struggle to keep their bond alive and secret from their wives.
You still go fishing with Jack Twist?
Not often.
No, I used to wonder how come you never brought any trouts home. You always said you caught plenty, and you know how me and the girls lack fish. So one night I got your creel case opened up before you went on one of your little trips. Price tag still on it after 5 years. And I tied a note to the end of the line. It said, "Hello, Ennis. Bring some fish home. Love, Alma." And then you come back looking all perky. It said you caught a bunch of brownies and you ate them up. Do you remember? I looked in that case first chance I got, and there was my note still tied there. That line hadn't touched water in its life.
It mean nothing, Alma.
Don't try to fool me no more, Ennis. I know what it means. Jack Twist. Jack Nasty. You didn't even go up there to fish.
Ennis Del Mar's inability to move beyond the boundaries of expectations dictated by time and community brings tear-inducing poignancy to Brokeback Mountain. Actor Heath Ledger stuns in the stoic role. Despite Innes' taciturn nature, Ledger says he found things he admired in the man he played.
His potential. You know, he had great potential to love, and I think the one time you really see the potential is with his kids, his children, because that's the one form of love he's really allowed to express. It's not dangerous to him. And with his wife, it just wasn't really love. It was what he thought should be love, and it was a routine that he slipped into because it was conventional, it was traditional, and obviously his love for Jack was forbidden, and he hated himself for it. He punished himself for it, you know. Essentially, he was a homophobic man in love with another man.
A lot has been written about the courage of straight actors to play these gay roles. But according to Jake Gyllenhaal, who plays Jack...
You know, what I think is really more courageous is people who are trying to be intimate in their real life and who are up against the real things. I think it's a time where more people are open to this than it might seem.
The message of Brokeback Mountain isn't progressive or new. Men finding it impossible to live with the sexual and emotional feelings they have for each other is a common theme in gay film. But Brokeback Mountain is different in a critical way. The integrity of that love is never questioned. Director Ang Lee affirms the feelings the two men have for each other as natural, deeply held, and undeniable, even if the men suffer because of that. That is the film's real breakthrough achievement. Also important is that Brokeback Mountain works against preconceptions and stereotypes. In a year that brought us the creepy loner gay guy in The Wedding Crashers and the over-the-top effeminate gay men in The Producers, that's a good thing. To recap, my picks for the top 10 LGBT films of the year were number 10, Coup de Jet; number 9, Unveiled; number 8, Walk on Water; number 7, Gay Sex in the 70s; number 6, Loggerheads; number 5, The Dying Gull; number 4, Mysterious Skin; number 3, Transamerica; number 2, Capote; and hands down number 1, Brokeback Mountain. My top 10 picks may not match yours, but the great thing about 2005 is that there was a lot of pride on screen for you to choose from. For more information on the films I've mentioned or other queer films, drop by prideonscreen.com. This is Steve Pride. Thanks for listening.
Every actor worth his salt strives to be honest and true in his portrayals on the stage or screen. Hello, this is Ian McKellen, and that's exactly what this program does as well. Join Greg and Lucia each week for This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine, right here on this station. Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the international gay and lesbian radio magazine. This week, Steve Pride brought us Pride on Screen 2005, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen online to This Way Out exclusively on Planet Out. There's a link at our website, thiswayout.org. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded by direct charitable donations from our listeners. Thank you. Log on to thiswayout.org to find out how you can help keep us on the air and own CDs of this and other keepsake programs as our thanks. To sign up for our weekly emailed program information messages and or our monthly This Way Out updates, email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California 90038, USA. For associate producer Lucia Chappell and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Happy New Year, and thanks for listening on CJSF Burnaby, British Columbia, WRIR Richmond, Virginia, KUCR Riverside, California, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Resolve to stay tuned.
This Way Out is heard every week as part of Queer Voices. You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT.
Yes, do make a resolution to stay tuned every Monday night from 7 to 9 to Queer Voices. I'm Deborah Bell.
Jennifer Renee.
Greg Chapman.
And we're with Lily Roddy, a popular astrologer in the Houston area. Lily, for many years, wrote a column for Uptown Express and then has a monthly column in Outsmart Magazine. And we thought, since this is the beginning of a new year, that it would be very interesting to talk about some of the things that we might have to look forward to according to the stars. Now, Lily, I have a question. I have never seen Astrology 101 in any college catalog. How does one start off learning astrology, the science of astrology?
Oh, well, thanks for asking, Deborah, and Happy New Year's to all of you. Well, actually, there are a few colleges in the U.S. that teach astrology, but mostly it's done by small groups or people that teach astrology 101. And you essentially learn the language of what the symbols mean and how to interpret them. And then you sort of spend several years, you know, going beyond the simple interpretation.
How long have you been doing it?
About 25 or 26 years.
And what drew you to it?
I just happened to be working with someone who knew astrology, and they were basically, I was just talking to them. I worked with them for a long time, and it was just, I just thought it was interesting, and the more I got into it, the more complex it got, and the more I was drawn to it.
So what is, where are we right now in the universe?
Now we're sort of on the far edge of our own galaxy.
Uh-huh.
Third rock from the sun. The planets continue to move. We're always in a different sort of pattern. Most of the patterns that we live through that are sort of long-term patterns that we identify with most closely are where the outer planets are, and that would tend to be Saturn, Uranus, Neptune, Pluto, sometimes Jupiter. And whenever those planets line up tend to sort of create the general atmosphere, the energy that we live in on the planet. And right now, as you could well tell, we're sort of in a harsh arrangement. We've been in a harsh arrangement really since about
middle
of July.
Husband Bush got into the White House.
Exactly. Well, but part of that, but the most recent time is sort of since July of 2005, and we're really in it till about the middle of 2007. It's been especially difficult during the holidays, and some of that will actually continue through February, and then things will sort of cool down a little bit overall. Things won't be so harsh, but then they'll pick back up in the summer, and there's some difficult things that are indicated, which things that are already talked about in the news, fuel problems, gasoline prices, those sorts of things, and also the continued danger of some of the storms that we've been experiencing all over the planet. So
was there evidence from astrology about what happened with Katrina and Rita?
I follow all hurricanes, and I follow each one usually by the hour, and I usually can tell when they're going to reach their peak and when they'll start to diminish easily. It's actually not very difficult, and we're just in a time frame where things are sort of expanded or overinflated in weather conditions and life and all sorts of things.
Well, of course, each one of us here, as you mentioned, we get kind of narcissistic, and we all want to know about our own sign. So how do you... I know you do a chart.
I do.
And so say a little bit about how that works.
Okay. An astrology chart is literally a picture of where the planets are in the sky based on the time date and birth location of every person. And from that chart, then you're going to get position for the Sun, Moon, Mercury, Venus, Mars, etc. And essentially, each chart is different unless two people happen to be born same day, same time, same year, right in the same location. But generally, charts are different, and then we sort of have a picture. And then my job as the astrologer is I interpret that picture, what it means, how that affects what people's life patterns are, how that might affect your relationship or your career path or your relationship with your family or health issues or all the things that go along with that. And most people come to me for I think of the big four, which is for self, family, relationship, and career. Occasionally I get a few health questions, a few questions about children. But primarily those are what people ask about because on that level we're sort of, you know, similar.
So in addition to doing the column and Outsmart, you also do private sessions, private readings.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah. Uh-huh.
And so, you have a question, Greg?
Yeah, I had a question. I'm just curious, would you say astrological influences are stronger than, say, a genetic tendency? Or weaker, you know, like a genetic tendency in somebody is something that they might be predisposed to catching or doing, but isn't necessarily something that will happen. So would an astrological influence be something that would actually be stronger?
Okay, I'll try to answer that the best I can. I studied genetics in college. That was one of my favorite topics. I've looked at entire families. And when I look at the entire family, what you can find is essentially the same sort of thing that travels throughout a family, like a genetic trait. It takes the right conditions for that to manifest. And one of the things that in my work that I do is that I can tell when something will occur, when something will come up in someone's life. So they could have had a very difficult experience, but you know, maybe that they keep that buried and then all of a sudden something comes along and then that sort of breaks it out. So there could be a tendency for an entire family to be very passive, you know, to not really confront things. But usually there's one person in the family who's their chart tends to be, they're the rebel. You know, they sort of manifest all those negative aspects in the family.
So have you looked at a general forecast for the year 2006 as far as, you know, what's going to happen politically, what's going to happen in the environment?
Absolutely. I do that every year, and I have for a long time. Yes, I think the political environment is, for the people that are in power currently, will continue to deteriorate, if that seems very obvious. And the environmental part is still on hold. There's a lot of resistance to people making a lot of changes there in terms of what we need to do. However, that'll change a great deal probably within the next 1 to 2 years. Those things will start to change a lot, and we should see a different element of power in play. And part of the reason for that is that there's a particular planet, I hope I'm not too technical, Pluto in Sagittarius. And Pluto spends about 12 to 15 years in each sign, except in Taurus and stuff, spends longer. And when it changes signs, it changes the environmental energy around us, and that will begin to change toward the end of 2007, and it moves into Capricorn.
It's a very different
energy, and that'll affect the U.S. and the U.S.'s economy radically, not just a little bit more positively. I would say usually the phraseology that I use for Pluto is it's the cosmic enema, so I wouldn't call it necessarily positive in the initial side of it, but its purpose is to detox. Its purpose is not to make things bad. Its intent is to clean things out, and that may feel horrible while we're going through that.
It does sound horrible.
And some people have admitted it is horrible. But yes, for this year, I always look for every year.
We always hear about this thing, Mercury's retrograde.
Retrograde.
Communications are fouled up. You hear Mercury's retrograde and the moon is void of course. And I've yet to figure out what that one means.
Okay. Mercury retrograde. Mercury retrograde means that the appearance is that Mercury moves back backwards against the sky. Astronomically, what's occurring is the Sun and Mercury, Mercury and the Earth are on the same side of the Sun. So actually, there's called an inferior conjunction. And it is true, it is not a good time to start new projects, to buy cars and things like that, sign documents, but the retrograde time is great for cleaning up, reorganizing, finishing things. It has a very good purpose. It just doesn't let you continue to move forward and avoid things. So it brings things up that you haven't done. And void, of course, is a, it means that the, it's the last position that the moon's in, and the last aspect it makes before it changes signs. I know that almost means nothing to you, but that's what it means, sort of.
So is Mercury retrograde at the moment?
It is absolutely not retrograde, and but Venus is retrograde, and so we're going to see a sort of a tightening of people's budgets and a more conservative sense of spending, and people taking a lot more consideration about what they really want. It's an internalized focus of what we desire individually, and can be problematic to creating a lot of havoc with relationships.
And at this point, I should break in and say that you are listening to KPFT 90.1 FM Houston, and this is Queer Voices.
Oh, this is Jennifer. I had a question, and that was, okay, anybody that's been out to a bar has been asked, what's your sign? And that usually infers what your sunshine, sun.
Your sunshine.
My sunshine in, right. My sun sign is, and but what is this, what does the moon have to do with it? When you say, well, moon sign.
Okay, well, thanks. That is a great question. Well, if we can think of the sun as sort of like your conscious sense of your ego, where you want to shine, the moon is your emotional and familial sense, and it's part of our unconscious, soul-based, genetic-based things that we pick up from our family. So how we respond to things emotionally, or how we respond to economic needs or economic fears usually is shown through the moon rather than through the sun. So the sun could be like what you want to be seen as versus the moon, which would be sort of more the dark or more private side of your personality.
And then you can have an ascending.
Ascendant, that's the outer personality aspect, and that's what tends to be most visible to everyone but you. And so that's sort of the personality that's sort of out there all the time. But it's usually not what people see of themselves. So.
Yeah, I've heard that the sun sign is the personality and the ascending is the individuality. Does that be correct in your viewpoint?
I think that's a good way to express it.
Yeah.
Individuality is just, but it's an unconscious aspect of the individuality. It isn't intentful.
Hmm. Well, I think everyone wants to know a little bit about what can be expected in the year 2006 for their sign. So let's just kind of go through each one and say a little bit about what they can expect.
Okay, well, I'll try to give that my best shot. That's what I'm here for. Let's start with Aries. And if you need to know what your birth date is, then you probably need to do a Google or something to see. Type in Aries. They'll give you the date. Aries this year are probably in one of the best patterns that they've been in for a long time. It tends to be a really constructive time. There tends to be a lot of creativity around them. And they're going to be able to mix, feel good about their lives, and sort of exude an element of self-confidence, which will be very positive for them in almost any area of their life, career, relationships, whatever they would like to do. Their sexual energies, I thought I'd bring this up, their sexual energies are stronger this year than they have been, and yet they're still able to sort of mix and not feel so much of a sort of a loss of their identity. So it's actually a very good year for Aries. So I would say, if you're going to be an Aries, that'd be the good thing to be. But it's a good time. Good for travel for them, good for school, good for relationships. So it's actually a very good thing.
And what sign are you, Lily?
I'm a Cancer sun sign with a moon in Virgo, Virgo rising.
Oh. Uh-huh.
So that means that I'm crabby, but I'm pleasant about it. Okay. Taurus, this year, relationship for Taurus are actually very good. if you're a single and a Taurus, then you probably need to sort of be out there making headway, meeting people, because this is really a good time for that. Your friendship arena is really working very well. There's a lot of energy around you being very positive, being a lot more magnetic. Career stuff is very confusing for many of you. You really don't know what you want to do. And it's probably a really good time to follow your heart, not necessarily to try to do what you've done with for a long time, which is very hard for Tauruses since they tend to be persistent. And some big issues with the family, where probably Tauruses are going to have to step in and be more responsible and take a greater role in their family and sort of be the head of the family. And they're a bit resistant to that because they try to get away from that because that's where they lose their own personal identity. I don't want to go too fast, but I don't want to run out of time for here. And Gemini, this is a very mixed year for Geminis. Career's a real challenge this year for Geminis. They have to be doing what they like or they will not be able to stay there. This would be a really good time for Geminis if they were, because there's sort of a rush of creative energy, but they're really wanting to change what they're doing and find something that sort of sparks their passion in their career. Relationships are rocky, okay? And that's probably going to continue for a while. But one thing I can say about that is that if you're a Gemini, you're not going to be able to just be with someone just because they're available. They're going to have to be a much more real connection associated with this and a greater level of intimacy associated with this. And Geminis are a little bit sort of reluctant to be as communicative as they usually are. So that's a little bit different for them because they're usually a lot more open. Cancer's the perfect sign. Like Aries, Cancers, this is really a great year for Cancers. Again, lots of creativity aspects that are open. They're going to tend to be a bit more magnetic in their personality, drawing a lot of good things to them. Good for travel, good for meeting with foreigners. Relationships tend to be a lot more open than they have been, and Cancers are feeling more open, which is usually not. They're usually sort of a more closed sign. The only difficulty they're going to have, probably for the next couple of years, is they need to really work, keep their money issues under control, take care of old things, take care of old bills, or if you haven't paid your taxes or talked to our Uncle Sam, probably need to take care of that because that's where, if you're going to have difficulties, that's where it's going to show up. But still, the positive aspects will outshine even that and will sort of make things smooth and flow along. Leos are in a massive time of self-reevaluation, and they are really focusing on what's important for them, which is really what they're supposed to be doing. Usually Leos tend to only be able to focus on themselves after they've done things for other people. But this year, the Leo energy is much more self-focused. Relationships tend to be difficult to impossible, and that's because there's a lot of sense of Leos are sort of giving up a lot of their illusions about relationships, and they are not willing to believe things that aren't true, and that's sort of a difficult time for them. Good time for them to be creative, however, because that is a very positive positive aspect for them. Leos could either be wanting to move, change their house, change it around, redecorate, something like that. Virgos.
Does that mean you don't want to be a Virgo right now?
Just all the people that are in Virgo just quaked right then.
They all took their collective breath.
How do we say this, Virgo?
That's right. Well, sometimes during readings, people ask me a question, and I'll stop and they'll go, is something wrong? And I'll go, no, I'm thinking. I have to actually.
It's okay.
Sometimes I have to think. Okay, Virgo. Relationships are very very unsettled this year. This is a really rough time for relationships. A time to do breakthroughs and not stay in the relationship if you don't like it. Great time for therapy, but not a good time to try to do the same old things. This is a really break up in your routines. Pretty harsh. Family issues, this is where Pluto is, good old Pluto, cosmic enema, and she is sort of clearing out old family issues for the best. Sometimes that may mean the loss of connection to your family that you haven't had. Felt as strong as you would like to. But in the reality, it's sort of giving you a better inner sense of your own confidence and actually can promote and help push you toward doing your career work much better than it has in the past. And doing a lot of sort of spiritual work on the unconscious level as well. I know that probably makes no sense, but that's still what's happening. Libras, the second best
there
sign.
You go. Oh, yes, there it is. That's me.
There's only second best signs, you know. There's one, and then there's the rest. Libras, this is actually a fairly good year for Libras. A good time to renew friendships and group organizations, to eliminate the ones that don't fit and bring some new people into your life. There's a tendency to spend a lot of money this year, but yet it's still a very good time for investments if you'll sort of keep them on the conservative side. And a time frame where you're really going to want to be heard. This will be a year in which you will not want to be dismissed or not listened to. And so this is your words carry a lot of power and a lot of communication. This year, a lot of power and force in your communication. And when you're also in your work environment, it's things are totally changing. You look for something much more exciting, you know, not wanting to do the same old thing. And if you're trying to do routines this year, you're going to be really bored. And also your creative energies are really good. So do something.
That's good. You'll hear my voice.
That's
every
right.
Monday, 7 to 9.
Scorpios. This year, Jupiter's in Scorpio, which is a nice place for Jupiter and for Scorpios. Good times, social, effective, makes Scorpios want to get out and meet people.
I'm ready to party.
Are you?
I'm ready to party.
And well, this started about the end of October, so you've probably been much more upbeat, much more positive than Scorpios are usually. There tends to be taking on a much greater sense of their own career path, paying a lot more attention to what they're doing, being more focused, and sort of breaking away from the family, not feeling so much influence there. Scorpios will have an extra aspect of magnetism, and that would be good for sex and relationships, even if you do them together. So it can be a really
especially if you do them together.
So it's actually a very good time for Scorpios. I would tell, if you're a Scorpio, get out there. I mean, this is really a great year, and it should be a great year all the way till really the end of November of 06. Sagittarians. Mixed energies for the Sag. Part of the Sag, particularly the latter part of the sign, are all very much sort of going through a big clean-out period. They're still in a creative time and are not sure about their life direction at this time. This is sort of an ending period for many of them and a closing period for a lot of them. So there's a lot of big finishing and finality stuff, separating from home. Could see the Sagittarians want to move or change their work, career and work direction at the same time. And can I ask, like, how much time am I doing?
About 2 minutes.
Okay, well, I'll have to talk. I don't think I can talk much faster. Capricorn. Capricorns, this is a sort of very serious year. The benefit of this year is that this is a good time for friends and groups, and probably a good place for you to find some sense of escape or solace. You're looking at life in a much more serious sort of way, not so open as you usually are. But it's nevertheless, it's a good time for classes, changing your direction, being more communicative, and being more open. So I'll keep going here. Aquarius. Again, tough year for Aquarians. Time to either get focused on your relationship and make it work, or bring it to a close and move on. No middle ground there. There's been a lot of confusion for Aquarians for a number of years. This year there's a much greater benefit for their career, a much more open sense of what's going on, a lot more positive things there. Probably feel a lot better. And a good time for them to be much more involved in high-tech or high-tech industries for making money. That's a very positive thing for them.
And that brings us to Pisces.
Pisces are another. This is another sign that's in massive change, and Pisces people need to really This is not a great time for relationships unless the relationship offers them enormous freedom. It's a great time to break away from what they've done in their career and do something totally different. This is such a time for Pisces to sort of represent and sort of get in touch with their individuality instead of trying to blend and please everyone around them. So it's on some level, it's difficult because the Pisces energy is sort of stressed, and normally they're considered themselves more flexible. But at this particular time, they're trying to be really... they're supposed to pay more attention to their own ego, not other people's.
Well, thank you, Lily, for telling us about what's ahead astrologically for 2006. And, of course, you can read Lily's column in Outsmart magazine, which should be on the stands today.
Maybe so.
Today or tomorrow. You have a lecture coming up?
I do. I have my year lecture, which I spend a little bit more time talking about the signs. It's going to be on Thursday, January the 12th. You can call me. It's okay to get my phone number?
Yes.
713-529-5842. Or you can find my email address in Outsmart, which is lilycath@aol.com. And I also have a beginning astrology class where I actually teach the language, and that's in January on the 21st and 22nd.
Okay, thank you. And you're listening to Queer Voices.
Happy New Year.
Laughing in my head and dancing in my dreams. Best love girl's like a fox on the hunt. She do everybody want, or she ever beg on a no. Not by you. Maybe. Not by me. She's the one to choose. Decide what she'll be. But oh! Shell loves him with a smile, he kills him with a touch. Best love girl won't tell you no. Will she ever say yes? Will she ever beg on a no? Not by you. Maybe. Not by me. She's the one to choose.
That song was called Best Love Girls. That was by Christy Claxton. We played that for a reason. Next week, she will be live in the studio. We don't have live artists very often, so please tune in for that.
This is Queer Voices.
This is Deborah Bell, and as we keep with our theme, we change around, we talk about politics, we talk about astrology, we talk about relationships, we talk about so many different things. But, you know, I'm one of those people that sits there and talks back to the television a lot, because the news comes on and it's all these things, and, you know, it just kind of gets to me. And there's someone else I know of in this community that can relate to this experience, because she kind of studies and observes what's going on politically, and by golly, she not only comes up with an opinion, but she likes to share it. So that's Carol Wyatt, and she shares her political rant with subscribers to her social notes, or you can go to the website socialnoteshouston.com and read her rant every week or so. And plus, Carol is a wonderful host and did a fantastic party during the holidays that benefited the Pride Committee, so thank you for that, everybody.
Thank you.
Rave reviews. So, I understand you're just a little upset about wiretapping.
I'm pissed.
Yeah.
Can you say that?
You just did.
Yeah. And, you know, George may be listening in while you're talking to your TV. Just kind of a thought there.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah. Yeah, while the Christmas holidays were going on.
I wonder if he's listening now.
Is he one of your two subscribers? You told me you had at least two.
I don't know.
Okay, could be.
He could be one.
Yeah, this would be legal listening, though, as opposed to what he's been doing, which is not the legal listening. During the Christmas holidays, the New York Times published an article that revealed that George Bush has been conducting illegal wiretapping on U.S. citizens in violation of both the Constitution and wiretapping statutes, and Shrubby came back and not only admitted it, he seemed proud of it and vowed to continue it. And in my mind, that's a true constitutional crisis we have brewing, and very, very concerned about it.
I don't quite understand. I mean, because it seems to be there's a lot of people trying to justify this being done. Like Colin Powell said, well, yeah, you know, and something about as the president and it's time of war, so I should have these additional powers.
Well, there's a couple of arguments that they're making, and it's really sort of like watching them justify the Iraq war. They just keep throwing...
Don't.
You just throw junk up against the wall and see if anything sticks. And then that's the same thing going on here. First of all, they tried to claim that he had the inherent powers of an executive at wartime. Well, the problem with that is we don't live in a monarchy. We have three co-equal branches of government, and... Article 2 of the Constitution obligates the president to faithfully uphold the laws of the land. And the specific law in question that he's violating is a statute called FISA that was written after Watergate, ironically. Kind of the worm turns full circle, doesn't it? Nixon had been caught wiretapping his political enemies, and so this statute was created that said that the president cannot wiretap U.S. citizens without approval of a special secret court. It's called a FISA court, and that has worked well for 20-some-odd years, and now Bush is just totally ignoring that law.
So the thing is, you're supposed to have a warrant in order to do this, and there has to be some kind of grounds in order to issue a warrant. So it's not like, well, I'm going to check in on this person just because there might be something that we will learn that will protect us from those terrorists, but it's because there's some solid evidence somewhere.
Well, yeah, but actually the FISA courts have proven remarkably pliable over the years. You don't need much of a justification. They have approved something like 17,000 warrant requests over the years and only turned down 6 or 7. So their standards are pretty darn low, and Bush has said, I don't care what the standards are, I don't have to follow the law. Now, some people say, well, that's too cumbersome in wartime to have to go get a warrant. FISA gives you the ability to wiretap for up to 72 hours and get a warrant retroactively, so don't give me that BS that this is too cumbersome to work with.
So this is a president, a sitting president, that has admitted to an impeachable offense.
According to John Dean and according to Carol Wyatt.
Well, what more, you know,
I think that should just seal it right there. Yeah. And, of course, yesterday, you know, he tried to come on and say, well, we're only tapping calls coming in from people that we know to be al-Qaeda into the U.S. Well, if you know they're al-Qaeda, why aren't you going to get them, number one? And number two, it's not only incoming, it's outgoing as well. So he just continues to lie. And I'm sorry, go ahead.
And why not go through the courts? I mean, the FISA courts are set up specifically to help deal with terrorist situations.
Absolutely. If George Bush felt like the laws were too cumbersome for him to do his job, he had two choices. He could either go to Congress and ask them to change that law, or he could just break it criminally, and that's what he's done. Now, the other thing they're trying to claim is the, I can't remember the name of the act. It was not a declaration of war, but the war powers thing that allowed them to go to Iraq. He's trying to claim that that gave him the power. There is nothing in that wording that deals with this issue. And in fact, on the eve of that article, whatever it was, being passed, they tried to get Congress to put the wording in that would allow him to do it. Congress said no. So they had been specifically turned down, and he said, screw you, I'm going to do it anyway. Now think about this. I mean, this doesn't, where does the power stop? What's to stop him from saying next fall, I think we're in a crisis and I'm going to declare martial law and suspend elections? Where does the power stop?
Good question, Carol White, and thank you for being on Queer Voices and sharing your political rant. And anyone else wants to know more about Carol's politics, it's socialnotes.houston.com.
Thanks for having me on.
Thanks
Happy
for
New
listening
Year.
To Queer Voices.
The time to understand the way I feel inside.
Welcome to This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. As the old year becomes new, we recall how queer music reflected some very queer times during the past 12 months. There'll be no news wrap this week or next, but along with hundreds of loving same-gender couples in the UK, Elton John and David Furnish have civilized their partnership. We're tracking other events in or affecting LGBT communities around the world to bring you up to date when NewsRep returns in 2 weeks. And now, with the first of our two traditional holiday season specials, here are Chris Wilson and J.D. Doyle, orchestrated by technical guru Christopher David Trentum, with their audio file, 2005 Year in Review.
Just one of the wonderful out gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgendered musicians who painted a rich mosaic of our life and times in 2005. Hi, I'm Chris Wilson.
I'm J.D. Doyle, and you're listening to our special Year in Review expanded edition of Audiophile.
The wide variety of musicians and musical styles we featured in 2005 made the task of choosing just a few a daunting one. But after much deliberation, we are very pleased to present to you eight of our favorites.
Eric Hyman's 2005 offering is his fourth solo album. It's called Dark Horse, and we love the energy of this album. His rockers have enough edge to surprise, his ballads really have something to say, and he even includes a little humor.
Eric Hyman and Dark Horse at www.erichhyman.com.
There's a big storm coming.
Album by Mary Gaucher is called Mercy Now. Its songs, termed country noir by one reviewer, bring us a dark and mournful eloquence.
That eloquence is guided by her mastery of image and her ability to find just the right words to bring it all together.
Yeah, we all could use a little mercy now. Deserve it, but we need it anyhow. We hang in the balance, dangle between hell and hallowed ground. And every single one of us could use some mercy. Night.
about the album Mercy Now by Mary Gaucher at www.marygaucher.com. That's www.marygaucher.com.
From Rochester, New York, Ben Schaefer brought us his debut album called The Upstairs Choir. In it, he shares some interesting commentary on the gay world around him.
It started up in the park. Aggressive men in the bars. Now he's got them on both ends of the line. Saturday night, he's got his prey inside. Pulls him in, puts his hands down the pants of a man he just met. How about that? And he says, oh God, I haven't found a place just yet. God says, well, boy, one chance is all you get.
Schaefer's album is not just acoustic folk, as it includes a variety of instrumentation that he wraps around very intriguing lyrics.
Good friend came to visit me north of Amsterdam. Brought with him a little toy train. Thought nothing of that, took me by the hand. Thought I needed a man with a strong stance. Didn't know I've swallowed many soldiers whole. But there are still times when I wish I'd stay. Especially when he's floating down that great northern
about the album The Upstairs Choir by Ben Schaefer at www.benschaefer.com. That's www.benschaefer.com.
2005 saw the release of the second album by New York City singer-songwriter Nadine Goldner called Sing It To Me Anyway.
The days go by and the clock's still ticking. Got nothing to say cause I've just been sitting here waiting for someone to tell me why. Waiting for the world to pass me by. Now, the days go by and the clock's still ticking. Can barely move cause I've just been sitting here waiting for someone. Monday morning, my neighborhood. Girl is crying, she don't look so good. Scars on her face, you can read the words her man spoke the night before. Well, outside my window, he was calling her name. Outside my window, she said, no, baby, please don't. That day I just kept walking like I'd never heard her before. Three blocks over, two more down. Drugs changing hands round. The sun now younger each passing day. Down on the corner the sales are high. Down on the corner now the baby's trying. It's been a week since I've seen a clear pair of eyes.
Nadine's CD delightfully showcases her unique acoustic-driven blend of scat, soul, and jazz.
She's up in the morning before anyone makes a sound. And the sunlight shines on her so bright. And I can hardly remember a day when things didn't start off this way. Sarah, what have you done?
Find out more about Nadine Golner and her album Sing It To Me Anyway at www.nadinegolner.com. That's www.nadinegolner.com. You're listening to the Audiophile 2005 Year in Review here on This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. I'm Chris Wilson.
And I'm J.D. Doyle. The Waiting Room is the title of the third album by Julie Lloyd, and in it she continues her blend of folk and energetic pop.
We are 10 million women waiting for someone to ask us to dance. We are crossing our fingers, we are flowers. Wanting flowers in a garden at the edge of the room. We are fragile and clumsy. We are brilliant and thundering. We are careful. We are hopeful. Waiting for someone to give us a hand. Waiting for the lovers we never had.
Julie's lyrics reach your mind while her gutsy guitar playing grabs you for the ride.
You can learn more about the album The Waiting Room by Julie Lloyd at www.julieloyd.com. That's www.julieloyd.com.
The prolific Candy Kane brought us White Trash Girl, her seventh album. And once again, she proves her talent is as big as her voice.
I'm a white trash girl. You don't have to have a child to pay.
album has a variety of styles, including boogie, gospel, jump swing, blues, and ballads. And like her previous records, her lyrics put her on the record about being openly bisexual.
She had the cutest Mona Lisa smile. I thought I had the time to try and make her mine. Something about her I just can't explain. Like a faded dream, don't even know her name. She seemed to be a long lost friend. And when she took my hand, I thought that I was in. She was sitting there all alone. She said, just take me home. And then she was gone. What happened to the girl I met here? Since I saw her, I can't forget her. What happened to the girl I met here? What happened to the girl?
Find out more about the album White Trash Girl by Candy Kane at www.candycane.com. That's www.candycane.com.
Chicago artist Scott Free, with a bit of tongue-in-cheek, has called his latest album They Call Me Mr. Free.
Covers a lot of territory, both musically and lyrically, and in addition to dealing with matters of the heart, it's also full of politics and protest.
This great nation has shown itself in all the glory. Up on high flies the truth and tenets of this land. Built a fortress upon the wisdom of the mighty. We must fight. The principles for which she stands. Gay shouldn't be allowed to marry. Ladies shouldn't be allowed to vote. Negro shouldn't be allowed to be free. Shouldn't be. Shouldn't be. Gay shouldn't be allowed to marry. And ladies shouldn't be allowed to vote. Negro shouldn't be allowed to be free. Shouldn't be. Shouldn't be. Feel the battle. A thousand stripes will wait forever. We the people will triumph with God on our side. Hail to victory. The treason is just surrender. Sing the phrases and shout us out of pledge of pride. Gay shouldn't be allowed to marry. Ladies shouldn't be allowed to vote. Negro shouldn't be allowed to be free. Shouldn't be. Shouldn't be. Gay shouldn't be allowed to marry. Ladies shouldn't be allowed to vote. Negro shouldn't be allowed to be free. Shouldn't be. Shouldn't be.
Find out more about Scott Free and his album, They Call Me Mr. Free, at www.scottfree.net.
RuPaul came back with her first album in several years and called it Red Hot.
I see you look at me and judge me with your eyes. Your words are meant to hurt and cut me down to size. Why must I explain to you? He loves me, I love him too. What on earth has that to do with you? So you criticize, do you realize? I'm a person just like you. Not gonna run and hide. Just 'cause you decide you don't like
eyes and you will see that love is blind. Take the time to understand the way I feel inside. Like a river, it must flow. Trouble choose the way it goes. In your heart of hearts, I think you will know. Cause if you've ever lost, then you know that love's heaven sent down from above.
Continues to bring us irresistible dance music. But this time, it's both more personal and political.
How do I look?
About RuPaul and the album Red Hot at www.rupaul.com.
And that's it for this special Year in Review edition of Audiophile. We would like to thank our co-producer, Christopher David Trentum, for helping to make Audiophile possible.
You can write to us at Post Office Box 66648, Houston, Texas 77006, or by visiting our website at www.audiophile.org. That's www.audiofile.org.
Audiophile is produced by J.D. Doyle, Chris Wilson, and Christopher David Trentum. I'm J.D. Doyle.
And I'm Chris Wilson. Keep listening.
Touch this skin, honey. Touch all of this skin, darling. You can't take it. You're just an overgrown orangutan.
This is Queer Voices.
I love to be queer.
Well, a few things before we end the show tonight. Tomorrow is Inauguration Day for the city, and we have some new people on City Council, and we have some people being reelected. Sue Lovell will be on the City Council for at-large position 2. She won that race very narrowly, but she won it. And, of course, Anise Parker is in her second term as City Controller, and Bill White will be in his second term as Mayor.
And 10 out of 13 endorsed candidates of the Houston Gay, Lesbian, Bisexual, Transgender Political Caucus PAC won their races. So it's quite an eventful day for us.
And if you're interested in politics, the caucus meets this Wednesday at 7 p.m. at the Community Center, which is 3400 Montrose, Suite 207.
And Ellen Cohen, who's going to be running against Martha Wong, is going to be the speaker. She's a dynamic woman, and it's time for people to come. That you don't have to be a member of the caucus to attend a meeting. That's important for people to know.
Yes, and definitely Martha Wong is on our list of people we don't want to return to Austin. So it's going to be an exciting year. It's always, the elections are always coming up. So get involved.
Yeah.
And if you're not registered to vote, get registered.
One to mention, Ann Clutterbuck was elected, one of the first Republicans that the caucus had endorsed this year.
Yes, and hopefully we'll have her on in the near future.
I'm going to see if we can get her on. Yeah. I'd like to ask her some questions.
Do you have questions?
Let everybody else can hear
the
answers,
talk.
Too.
And speaking of next week, on next week's show.
Yes, next week I've got Tucker Duncan, the writer-director of Transamerica, will be on in the 7 o'clock hour, first segment. Transamerica opens on the 13th at the Landmark Theaters.
And then we'll have Philip Maniard from the Alley talking about culture clash in America and the Act Out series that's at the Alley.
And we'll have a live studio artist, Christy Claxton, playing songs and talking about a new CD release that she's involved with.
And also that she's going to be playing at my 56th birthday party.
Is that a retro party?
No, it's just the usual Sweet Savage chocolate. Everybody brings chocolate to share. And we're also going to try to raise some money to help Christy do a CD that helps against domestic violence programs.
Gosh, the Sweet 56 party.
I know.
And speaking of music, if you missed last week's show, which we all did because we weren't on, which was supposed to be the second segment of the Christmas special.
You can hear it on my website, www.queermusicheritage.com.
Okay.
So thanks for David Elliott being with us from Washington, Lily Roddy with the astrological forecast, and Carol Wyatt with her political rant.
And the folks at This Way Out.
And we'll be back next week with a new show. Also coming up in February, we'll be raising funds to keep the station on the air and to be able to do the programming that we do. So we'll be asking you to support our station. And if you pledged in the past and haven't fulfilled your pledge, please do so. And thank you again for listening to Queer Voices, and have a great
happy
everybody.
New Year!
New Year.
Yay.
You have been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 7 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Valensky. On-air voices are Glenn Holt, J.D. Doyle, Deborah Bell, and Jack Valensky, with remote correspondents Joan Devlin in Iowa and David Elliott in Washington, D.C. For more information about guests, events, and organizations mentioned in the show, visit queervoices.org. Some of the music you heard is listed or available on J.D. Doyle's website, queermusicheritage.org. Be sure to listen every Saturday morning at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. This is listener-sponsored and commercial-free Pacifica Radio, KPFT, at 90.1 FM, 89.5 FM Galveston, and worldwide via streaming audio from kpft.org. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
Society for the Performing Arts, SPA, bringing the world's best to Houston, presents the Houston debut of Cynthia Hopkins, Accidental Nostalgia.
Friday and Saturday, January 13th through 14th at 8 p.m. in Wortham Center's Cullen Theater. Can a best-selling neurologist who suffers from psychogenic amnesia trust her memory?
Can she change her whole life by simply changing her mind?
Bessie and two-time Obie winner Cynthia Hopkins, backed by her alt-country band, Gloria Deluxe, explores the pros and cons of amnesia and the remarkable story of Cameron Seymour, neurologist, amnesiac, identity thief, and Sufi.
Please note this performance contains brief female nudity.
Tickets can be purchased online at www.spahouston.org.
By phone at 713-227-4SPA.
This is KPFT Houston.
Hi.
This is Sonali Kohatkar. The Pacifica Radio Archives is the oldest collection of public radio programming in the United States. Within its walls, you'll find a vast collection of voices like Malcolm X, Noam Chomsky, Langston Hughes, Alice Walker, Paul Robeson, Howard Zinn, Gorby Dahl, June Jordan, James Baldwin, Jermaine Greer, and many, many others. Visit the new user-friendly website at www.pacificaradioarchives.org, where you can hear samples from our collection in our new Listening Salon section. And you can now order your favorite programs on CD and cassette. Once again, that's www.pacificaradioarchives.org. This is Sonali Kohatkar for the Pacifica Radio Archives.
It's been bandied about. KPFT and its parent body, Pacifica, is democratizing. Without listener involvement, these are just words. Help turn them into reality. One way to do this is to join the Program Evaluation Committee. This committee receives input from listeners, reflects on it, and tries to turn it into a unified report shared with the local station board and the program director. The goal, of course, is to improve KPFT programming. The discussions at these committee meetings are both stimulating and fun. Come, join in. The committee meets on the first Wednesday of every month from 6:30 to 8 p.m. at Leisure Learning Unlimited. That's located at 2990 Richmond, 6th floor. For more information, call KPFT at 713-526-4000.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.